Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
Yes, it is Friday Night Racing. If you're listening to this on the radio, well, we did this thing live this afternoon on Facebook, YouTube and on Periscope. Just follow us on our various social handles and you'll be able to get access to this content before it actually even goes out on the radio. But that's not to say that you're missing anything. If you listen to us on the radio, this is our best bits. So as ever, Johnny Ward is here. Johnny, how are you doing?
Great. How are you, Ger?
We're up to 700 quid in our charity bet so far. So I thought we'd had a winner last week. You're saying that we were already up at 700 last week. So
we had a winner in the shape of Best Not Argue at Gorn, and I'm pretty sure I tipped Aminat last week. So that was a loser, unfortunately. But we're going to go to foreign shores this week, and we're going to bet into the Paris Mutuel. So we're going to funnel our money through to France.
Very good. We'll get to the going at Longchamp a little bit later on. And it is at Longchamp as opposed to Chantilly. We'll talk about that because there's a little bit of stuff around that. But I think before we get to all that, let's join our special guest this week. And it's jockey Ronan Whelan. Ronan, how are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Ah, look, there's the best Skype connection in the world. This is like you're sitting in the room with us. How
that's,
you doing?
That's the same backdrop as Adrian McGoldrick has. Is that the only one that they have in the car?
They all live in this massive, amazing house. That's how it works in racing.
For a minute there, I thought you were taking over from Adrian McGoldrick, you know. But anyway.
I wouldn't have his knowledge now.
No.
Ronan, it's been a pretty good year for you so far. A big win at the Longines Champions weekend and mad scenes in the parade ring in the immediate aftermath of that. Talk us through a bit of that.
Yeah, obviously going into the meeting, she was one of the favourites and there was obviously a bit of pressure with it and all that. So probably a lot of that was relief. But it was Patrick and myself, it was our first group one, and, you know, just it's what everybody strives to in this game, and just to get that one on the board and get the monkey off the back was a big, huge day for us, you know.
Yeah, we're the Skitter Scatter and Patrick Prendergast there. There's how much it means as well on the video.
We were just seeing some of the B-roll footage of that there. So when you say there's a bit of pressure heading into you because of the amount of expectation, how much of that are you aware of? Like, you know exactly how good the horse is heading into the race. Are you good yet at, like, separating that and saying, well, look, this is just the same as every other race? Or do you actually have to be a little bit more adrenalized and take cognizance of the fact that, yeah, you know, you are going to react and respond a little bit differently because you feel that this is just a bigger occasion?
Well, yeah, like at the end of the day, it is just another race, but it's not like any other race in the sense, like, you know, the lower grade stuff, if it doesn't happen today, you've always got another day, whereas, you know, there's only one mile there, there's not too many group ones that come around, so you're trying to evaluate what's going to happen and have every stone covered, you know, that whatever occurs on the day, you know what's going to happen and how to deal with it. Look, I've been lucky enough, he's put me up in a lot of Group 1 races beforehand, and I kind of knew what to expect going into it, and that was a big advantage for that. But, yeah, look, you just try to have everything covered, and whatever scenario occurs that you could deal with in the best way you can. Look, you'd like to approach every race the same, but as I said, like, there's not many Group 1s, and you just try to make the best of what you can.
I mean, you can't fake it, really, can you? Especially not early on in your career, that this is somehow the same as a pony race.
No, I think jockeys have to learn not to be afraid to lose, you know, and it's kind of, it's like the good sportsman. You have to be you have to be willing to try things, and you know, if you have a fear of losing, you're not going to make those moves mid-race. I think that you know, will ultimately pull out great victories. But I think Ronan and Skitter Scatter, they kind of get on very well because they both have a great attitude, and I suppose Ronan, she's fairly straightforward to ride as well. She's not one of these fillies where you have to kind of cajole her or whatever. She just wants to win.
Yeah, exactly. Very much so. And look, it's a big help knowing her and all that. You know, going into the race, my plan was to keep her comfortable, whether it had me up in the van or out the back or in the middle of the pack. You know, it was just to keep her comfortable and just get her in a rhythm. And look, riding for Patrick and the Rogers family, there, you know, they leave it to you and they don't put any pressure in that sense that you have to do A, B or C, you know. They know it's a race and different things can happen, and that, look, at the end of the day, that's why they employ you, because you know the feel, you know, you're the one that should know what's going to happen. So, look, she is very straightforward. It does make life a lot easier. Jockey, but as you said, I agree with you. Like, as you have to be afraid to lose. Like, if I went out there and I had it in my head that I had to sit second or third, I think that would have cost me the race. Where, you know, I took a chance, got her comfortable, and lucky enough, it worked out. She came home well.
Well, let's relive that moment now. We can have a listen to the radio commentary. Have a look.
The Moidler Stud Stakes main edition with Lady Kaya coming there on the near side. Then comes Zagatova, Angelic Light, Skitter Scatter, Beyond Reason is next with Just Wonderful, racing now towards the final furling and a half, and it's on the near side in the purple and white jacket, Lady Kaya and Robbie Colgan, who come to the front from main edition. And then comes Zagatova, Skitter Scatter is running on over on the far side. They got 150 yards to go, and it's Lady Kaya with Skitter Scatter coming on the far side, and as they run to the finish, Skitter Scatter, it's a champion Sunday to save her for Ronan Whelan and Patrick Prendergast.
Yeah. Hairs in the back of the neck stuff for you, listening to that?
Just, I haven't watched that since that day. Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, it's at the time, you don't kind of, maybe not so much you don't appreciate it, but, like, as I said, I don't think I'd be talking to you guys if I didn't win that, and just all the well wishes and everything I've got since. Like, you know, it's the Longines International meeting. Like, it's an international thing. It's not just say here in Ireland. It's worldwide. Like,
yeah, it's class, isn't it?
Yeah, like, and you know, in fairness to the Longines Champions Weekend, the bounty was spread around a bit, and it has been since the start. And this has been a very unique year in Ireland in that Aidan O'Brien hasn't had a stranglehold on the classics. In that Jessica Harrington, Ken Condon. And, you know, they won classics, and then you had Patrick Prendergast winning a Group 1. And Patrick and Ken Condon would be definitely deemed two of the nicest guys in racing. And they'd have similar numbers, similar age, similar profile, struggling for that good horse. And every now and then they come on one. And I remember after the race, I spoke to Dave Keena, who would be Ronan's agent, and he spoke about this guy from Georgia who was looking after Skitter Scatter sort of day in, day out. And I ended up talking to him after the race. Pata Kevidze is my bad, like, Georgian pronunciation.
Yeah,
wouldn't
you know
be
the anthem, but you can't say
yeah,
that, right?
It wouldn't be the best, but I ended up ringing Pat after race, and he came over to England and then came to Ireland via Georgia, where he used to ride a little bit, and he was beside himself. But he spoke about the week before the race, he was riding Skitter Scatter in a bit of work, and Ronan was on another horse, and he said Ronan was nearly more just like smiling and beaming, looking at how well Skitter Scatter was going than the horse that was actually under him. I don't know if you can actually corroborate that story, Ron.
Yeah, I rode a filly I would have made on in Leopardstown first time out, and Patrick asked me when we pulled up, well, were you happy with her? Yeah, she looked great, didn't she? I said to him, no, your filly, I meant. Oh, yeah, she went well too, yeah.
And winning a maiden first time out in Leopardstown isn't a bad thing, you know?
Ah, you're not all right.
This one's a nice filly, and I'm looking over at Pat, and he's pulling double on Skitter, like, so I was pleasantly pleased what I saw.
It was these. It's just the characters involved as well in that. When you won that, just like the outpouring of emotion from your parents and how thankful they were that you had the opportunity from the owner and from the trainer. Because there's such a small slice of that pie for the likes of you to have a chance of winning the Group One, and you know, they could have easily said, well, we're going to have a more senior jockey, but you know, owner and trainer were very happy to use you. And I suppose the lovely words from Patrick after the race, where he said, you are world class and I have full faith in you.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, you know, you see many times where when it comes to these big days, the owners and trainers, they try to, you know, it's like, yeah, they look for the big name jockeys, the lads have been there and done it before, and it gave me huge confidence that they're willing to leave me on her. And I suppose it's the fact I knew the filly as well.
Ah, just having a bit of trouble with that line. What we'll do, yeah, we'll get him, we'll help, cut that line, we'll go back and see if we can reach
the joys of Skype. Dr. Adrian McGoldrick had a better line.
Well, the bit where I came on and was like, wow, it looks like you're in the room here, I completely hexed it. So,
yeah.
To just explain for people who don't fully understand. The Prendergast Yard, where in the hierarchy, like, so everybody knows in flat racing that there's the O'Briens, there's Godolphin, and they're the superstar, they're the Man United, Barcelona, Real Madrid. But where do the Prendergast Yards fit into that?
Like, you would have, things are changing a bit in Ireland in that I think Jim Bulger, Kevin Prendergast, Dermot Whale, they're all obviously getting to the advanced stage of their careers. Kevin Prendergast is 86, and Jim and Dermot obviously are a bit younger, but they are they're getting to, I suppose, the later stage of their career, and ditto John Ox, who wouldn't be the power that he was either. So there is actually a space for the newer trainer to come up, and Patrick's been there for quite some time, and he's obviously, he's a nephew of Kevin Prendergast, but he's training at the Curragh, and he's had the odd sort of good horse, but he would be a very adept trainer. But I think he admitted after he's only about 20 horses in training, so that's not many, you know, and it's actually not even that easy to make it pay when you're training 20 horses. So you would have him, Jessica Harrington would be new to the scene in recent years, and you would have then the likes of Michael Halford. So I suppose they would be like the, they would be maybe the Division 2 kind of in terms of the numbers that they have versus the top yards. But the gap is closing relative to everyone except Aidan, who's still completely powerful. But that was why this success was a big thing, because Patrick Prendergast, he just needed a chance to come on a nice horse. And she's just been such a flag bearer for him and Ronan, because this is, it was Ronan's first one. It's also first Group 1. It's his first season where he's gone over 40 winners. But it's the Group 1s ultimately that matter. And the publicity strike that is for him is just colossal.
How does a horse like Skitter Scatter end up in the Prendergast Yard?
Well, she's a very good pedigree. She's by the late Scat Daddy, who would obviously have sired a lot of very good horses for Aidan O'Brien, and is now deceased. So just happened to get on one of these nicely bred horses. And it is, unfortunately, flat racing is generally about pedigrees. You know, Ken Condon, he got Romanized. Who wouldn't have the most flashy pedigree in the world, and he just turned to be a bit better than that. But she has the pedigree to do very well. And I'm not 100% sure how he actually sourced her. Ronan would know that. But when you do get this precocious two-year-old, probably in a year in which the Ballydoyle horses were slightly slow to come to hand, she was able to take advantage.
OK, we'll try and re-establish contact with Ronan. Ronan, we were just asking how Skitter Scatter came to be in the Prendergast Yard in the first place. You might know a little bit about that.
Yeah, she was owned in partnership with she's in America, and she went to the sales over there, and obviously looking at her as a physical, she wouldn't be one now to fill the eye or anything, and I think that she went through the ring, Rogers bought the other guys out, and I think how she came to end up come to Patrick was, they had a horse last year with Patrick, Cooper River, and he won a maiden for Patrick, and you know, and well, Patrick did a good job with him, so I think they just felt, you know, they were happy enough to send another one to him.
That's actually the beauty of the story. She's not very big, like, and she wasn't, you know, the belle of the ball or anything like that, and that's why she ended up, I suppose, back with less fashionable connections, because she wouldn't physically be a horse that you'd say, oh, she could be something. And it's not fashionable to buy small horses, even though often, certainly as a two-year-old, they'd be well able to perform. And I think that was the story of Seabiscuit back in the day. He wasn't particularly good to look at. You know, we have horses down the years that wouldn't have great pedigrees that, you know, that became special. And I like that kind of, I suppose, the racing can throw up those kind of oddities.
Yeah, and it changes the life of certain trainers or owners or jockeys in this case as well.
Like, absolutely. Like, and
that's the glory of the sport.
I don't want to romanticise it too much, but you have a jockey who hasn't ridden a Group 1, a trainer who's had very few like proper horses, and a filly who was kind of disregarded because she wasn't big enough. You know, and they combined to make this beautiful kind of, I suppose,
trifecta.
Story as well. Yeah,
it's the proper trifecta. We'll try one last time, Ronan, to see if the line is any good. Your experience with Jim Bulger is obviously what set you off on this path. You had to leave school at 15 to take advantage of the opportunity there. So that was a big kind of sliding doors moment in anybody's life.
Yeah, obviously, Mum and Dad weren't too keen about me leaving school, but they said the only way that would happen if I went down to Mr. Bulger's, and it's actually our anniversary today. I've been 10 years with him today, so I am, and I haven't looked back, thankfully, and I've had plenty of good days for him. I've rode in the Derby for him. I finished third. I was second in the Guineas for him. You know, I got to lead his good horse, Don Approach, who I used to ride out here as well. So I've been lucky enough that I've always been surrounded by good horses and obviously by good people there as well. You know, enough they've brought me up from a young kid to what I am now, and hopefully there's still more progress in me.
Yeah, well, listen, congratulations on what's been an excellent season so far. Long may it continue, and best of luck with everything. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
It's Ronan Whelan there, giving us some insight into his season so far. It's a pity about the line, because we definitely would have chatted a bit more about that whole Jim Buzzard connection,
you know,
and how
you think
go.
That we're back in the Celtic Tiger and all that, but sometimes our broadband still isn't the Mayo West, unfortunately.
No, it's true,
you know?
It's true, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's Kildare. It's not exactly the Sticks. You know, you're from Kildare, of course. I mean, it's a bit disappointing that...
it is not the Six.
Yeah. It's not the Six.
No.
But great guy, and one of the... He never seems to be in bad form, you know, and he still has those boyish looks that he had when he was a kid, and he burst onto the scene, but it was just like, how do you make that step up? And he's waiting in the wings behind Kevin Manning, who is just a colossal performer, and I think he's in his 50s now, still going strong at Jim Bulger's, and he's just had to be patient.
And so a bit more patience and you stay with Jim Bulger's. Is that kind of how that works? Is that?
Yeah, like, but Ronan, in fairness now, Ronan could be in line for a job elsewhere as well if he continues the way he's going, because he's an excellent rider. He's a great guy to work with as well, temperamentally. You know, you look at Ballydoyle down the years, a lot of Aidan O'Brien's relationships with these top jockeys, you know, weren't entirely straightforward, for various reasons, really. A lot of it to do with just the pressure of the job, but Ronan is just, he's a dream to work with. So, like, that's one thing you don't need to worry about, temperament or...
How do trainers tell which of these jockeys is better? It's not like you can look at the, you know, you can't do an NFL-style combine. I need to see your torque, your distance over 10 yards. How much can you bench press? Mm-hmm. Like, I need to know how well you can whisper to a horse. And yep. Can you whisper better than that other person there?
Like, would Aidan O'Brien have employed Joseph O'Brien and Donnacha O'Brien if they hadn't been his sons? It probably wouldn't have worked out like that. So they got a head start. And what we got then was Joseph winning all these Group 1s. We've Donnacha going to actually bidding this year to break his own brother's record for winners in a season. And I made this point earlier today that Donnacha probably doesn't get the credit he deserves because of his surname. You know, and he's such a laid-back character. There's no nonsense out of him. And he's become a really, really good rider, who also is doing incredibly well in terms of his weight. So, you know... Talent is it can get you so far. You know, you look at, we had Sean Flanagan on recently. You know, Sean wouldn't have been an obvious type to go to Noel Mead, but Noel Mead gave him the job and he's done well. So a lot of it is graft, but I think in terms of talent,
is there much that separates the top level? Like, is it possible at the end of all of this to say, like, Kieran Fallon, Frankie Dettori, they were all far better than their peers, and there is something that we can identify that is the thing that makes them, that separates them?
I don't know if you can identify it, really. I mean, we could all say Paul Carberry was a genius and that, and there was something about the way he handled horses that probably meant that he was. But in terms of actual raw talent, you could do an entirely stats-based thing in terms of, does this jockey win on horses more often than he should? So what you do is there, you would base that on the expected result of each. You know the way now on Match of the Day they have like the expected goals, yeah, which is an interesting thing. So we'll say, I'm not sure what the expected goals were for the Chelsea-Liverpool game, but you'd have expected Hazard to get that second goal. So Chelsea probably had an expected goal tally of higher than one. So in if you flip that into racing, you could say, well, Ronan's ridden, say, he's had 42 winners, 407 rides this season up until now. So should he have had more than 40 winners or less than 40 relative to the price of his horses, basically? So that's one way of looking at it. But there's a lot more to it than just talent. Like, first of all, a lot of jockeys would have issues in terms of just... I suppose just their mentality, because it's such a tough, it's seriously tough game. A lot of them would have had issues with maybe drink down the years. Some jockeys have had drug issues, you know, and it's not all that surprising because it's such a tough sport and they're wasting away a lot of the time. So temperament, reliability, ability to deal with owners is a huge, ability to turn up on time for work, ability to give good advice in terms of judgment of a horse. So, like, Ronan could be able to say to Jim Bulger, you know, yeah, that horse is good, that horse is no good. And if Ronan isn't able to give advice to Jim Bulger in terms of the ability of a horse, in terms of its ground preference, in terms of whether it wants to go left-handed or right-handed, that's a big black mark against him. So Jim Bulger would say, well, you know, if I do want to jockey down the line, maybe he doesn't fit the bill. So a lot of it is, and it's also ability to deal with disappointments, because Ronan has been winning 10% of his races this season. That means 90% of them haven't been victorious. So how do you deal with that? And how do you deal with the fact that he could have been easily deemed as one of these jockeys who'd plateaued? He was a very good apprentice, but then to make the step up, he's kind of in no man's land at Jim Bulger's. He's not going to get that many winners from Jim's. Where does he go? So he could have fallen off the radar, you know, like many footballers who went to England, came back to Ireland and couldn't make it anymore.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so how do you have a relationship with Jim Bulger but also end up on the Prendergast horse? And that's just because he's second, really, at Jim Bulger's. If he was first at Jim Bulger, then there wouldn't be the chance to the Prendergast.
Absolutely. And, Jim would mind his apprentices, but Ronan's not an apprentice anymore, so he does need to, you know, he does need to, I suppose, step up to those good horses. And in fairness, you can't stand in someone's way when it wouldn't clash with your own horse, because Kevin Manning would have been riding for Jim anyway. And it'll be interesting to see what Ronan does for the winter. I think he possibly has the option of going to Dubai and riding over there, because he's hot property at the moment. 40 winners, season's far from over.
Right, yeah, that would be good. That's the type of thing that, like, again, exposes you to better horses. You get the opportunity to win on those.
Yeah.
People notice that you've been successful.
Absolutely. And you know the way when somebody dies, like, he's always, oh, he was a great guy, you know, and he made me, because of, you know, with such respect for the dead, like, oh, he was a great guy, actually. Yeah, well, okay, he was. Ronan Whelan, first of all, he's not dead, but second of all, he is an absolute gent, like a gent, like, of, you meet him after the races on the way home, he's all smiles, no airs or graces. And what that meant to his family to win a Group One, you know, and how loving his parents have been. And You know, you see the articles about, Shane Keegan wrote an article recently in the Times about parents and their role in developing kids as footballers. And you can see the kids on the side, their parents on the sideline who are shouting and roaring, and, like, it's not a good influence on the kids. But they would have had a great influence on him, and they shared that glory with Patrick Prendergast and the owner when he won the Meugler.
Yeah, fair enough. That's great. And they're the type of stories that you want to hear about, because, like, it is great that we have such bleeding edge, world-leading facilities and teams that you have in Ballydoyle and that side of the game, and with Willie Mullins. And you also need to hear the rest of this, these people who are coming through and making it against those odds.
The rest of it, as you put it, is what drives Irish race men and women, in my view. I think we saw with Fleming Star, when the late Peter Casey trained him, out of the blue, Gordon Lord Byron with Tom Hogan. The journeymen who get the good horse, we don't really necessarily warm to an all domineering force, be it Kilkenny in hurling. Everyone is, you know, Dublin in football is probably prompting people to want to change the rules, and we've all these raft of proposals now just because Dublin are very good. Yeah. And people resent what Dublin have become, and Kilkenny, rightly or wrongly. And it's the same in racing. Not generally, people don't want Aidan O'Brien to be winning everything, and they don't want Willie Mullins to be winning everything. And when Patrick Prendergast gets a winner, he will get a far bigger cheer winning the Meugler than, you know, probably Aidan would for winning the Derby. And that's just the way Irish people are, and I wouldn't knock them for that.
No, for sure. Okay, so this week, as usual, we're looking for Johnny to make use of our charity bet from the tote.com. Our winnings so far are over €700, with the Arc in Longchamp. On Sunday, Johnny's going to talk us through his fancies. You can bet on all the races directly into the massive French pools at Longchamp and stream them live from thetote.com. So, what are your selections?
I'm just going to go with one, but just to mention as well that, you know, if you are betting into the tote, it funnels into the pool literally across the English Channel. It'll go into the French pool, and I remember being I remember rather back in Deep Impact when he won the Arc. I didn't back Deep Impact. I tip Rail Link in the paper, but Deep Impact was the Japanese horse, and all the
Everybody suddenly going, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Did you back Deep Impact and actually tip something else?
There's actually a story to this eventually. But Deep Impact was this Japanese superstar, and I wasn't in Longchamp that day, but I think half the course were Japanese people, and right, they literally flooded the place. And they would not be very cognizant of value. So they literally just back deep impact. So he went off something like 1-2 when he should have been definitely long odds against anyway. And Ray Link was sent off like 27 or 8-1 when he was 10-1 over here.
Right.
So the tote over there, probably less so now, but it can be quite skewed in terms of one selection. I think Kew Gardens will be the play on the tote because I don't think there's going to be a clamour to necessarily back him in France. I think they'll back Enable or they'll back some of their local hopes. And this horse has just had an extraordinary season. He's when he ran down the field in the Derby, I think that was his third start of the season. He didn't look like he was particularly going anywhere. But he's basically, he's winning the Ledger last time, marked him out as a very, very good horse. And I think they're just riding him differently. They're riding him to kind of complement the class that he has rather than to imply that he's slow. Because I think earlier in the campaign, they thought that he was probably just too slow for these races over a little shorter. But Aidan O'Brien, the way he trains these horses, you don't know when they're going to stop improving. And he's obviously a Galileo horse who's just really appreciated Aidan's handling. He hasn't got a great draw. I think he's 14, but it won't matter because he'll be held up. There's a lot of criticism as well about Longchamp, the new track and the ground. There are apparently quite serious issues with the ground over there. So with an 18-runner field, the almost certainty that there will be some trouble in running, do you want to back Enable at what will probably be even money, or do you want to back Kew Gardens at 12s? Aidan has won the race 2 years ago, obviously won it with Dylan Thomas in the past as well. I think this horse, he probably will fall short, but he has an each-way chance.
Did Kew Gardens win over the Arc Course and Distance on Bastille Day in July?
He did, and that was the performance subsequent to his win at Ascot, which kind of just showed that he was improving because he was dropping back in trip, but he showed that he'd turn a foot that day. So it was like, is he just slow or is he a mile and a half horse? That run to me suggested that he was probably just better being held up than needing to go further.
So hang on, so wins over track, course and distance there in the summer, and then wins the Ledger.
Yeah, so the Ledger is an extended mile and six.
And so how long is the
The Arc is in the mile and a half again.
Okay. But
like, it's not so much trip with him, I think. And Ryan Moore said after the Ledger, because Aidan then won the Irish Ledger with Flag of Honour the following day, but Ryan Moore said, I wouldn't be rushing to step this guy up in trip. I think he could go back in trip. And that was consistent because at the 2 furlong pole, he was full of running, which is the equivalent of the mile and a half, you know, of the Arc. And it was just a question of his class winning through. And Stayers have actually done well in this race. Westerner, I think, was second in it. Order St. George was third in it. And Kew Gardens might not necessarily be a stayer. It just might be that he's the best horse running over a mile and six at the moment. But I love the way he's progressed. And, you know, there he is with Aidan as well. And Aidan, in fairness to Aidan, he was of the opinion earlier in the season that this horse is better than some people think he is, and he was, as ever, he was proven correct, you know. And Aidan knows the score, like, you know. But it's funny because he's mile and a half horses this season in terms of his Derby horses. It just hasn't worked out for one reason or another. Saxon Mario probably didn't get a mile and a half, and then he got injured. He's now retired, so it's kind of been a strange campaign. He hasn't really had proper good milers either. He's had horses injured. He had that blip in the campaign in terms of the bug in the barn as well. But this horse comes here with a lot of confidence.
See the Class is the other kind of slightly bigger price. So Enable is probably going to be even. Sea of Class around about 6-1.
Yeah, Sea of Class, like, is definitely one of my favourite fillies in training. And she seems to give the suggestion that she's kind of only doing enough in her races. And I could easily see her go very, very close here. I think she could definitely give an able race, and she's unbeaten since her seasonal debut. She actually ran at York the same day as Latidar, who was second to Kew Gardens in the Ledger, and they both created a huge impression. They're 2 3-year-old fillies who are outstandingly talented. But Sea of Class, she has a big, big chance. She's gotten I think she's a reasonable draw as well. And I would prefer, if I had 2 bets in the race, it would be her and Kew Gardens, but I wouldn't be back in Enable.
Okay. The other thing that you wanted to talk about this weekend was Saturday's Kingdom of Bahrain Sun Chariot Stakes at Newmarket.
Yeah, so alluding there to Aidan, I suppose, having a disappointing season. I mentioned recently, I think, between Gustav Klimt, Clemmy and September, who would have been sort of 3 of his real, you know, hopes for the Classic campaign. September hasn't won, Clemmy hasn't won, and Gustav Klimt won a kind of run-of-the-mill race early in the season. So it has been a bit disappointing. But Clemmy was actually, she wasn't right early in the season. She's a sister to Churchill. Do you get the reference?
Clemmy Churchill?
Did you watch? Dattley? No. Didn't watch.
I haven't seen the movie. Is it good?
Yeah, no, you didn't watch the Dunkirk?
No.
And you didn't watch the Churchill movie?
I was watching Dunkirk on a plane, and there's this mad scene where the plane is crashing. I'm like, well, I might watch this some other time.
Did you watch the what's
Churchill
the
movie?
The Royal Family Netflix, what's it called again? The Royals?
No.
Didn't watch that either?
No.
What do you watch?
American stuff.
Okay. We'll get to that on another show. But Clemmie was Churchill's wife.
Okay. Right.
So you're not going to have a wife like representing you in equine form. So Clemmie is Churchill's sister in racing. So they named her after the Churchill's wife, who was such a profound influence on his career when he wasn't drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
You know. But Clemmie was a lot like Churchill, very precocious as a 2-year-old, the horse that is. And she just had an abridged campaign. She started off very late. She missed the guineas. Her run behind Lawrence at Leopardstown, to me, was a big step in the right direction. This was the race which, sadly, was Mastercraft and Filly Alpha Centauri's last run when she got injured. It was kind of noted for that more than Lawrence winning. But Clemmie was closing all the way to the line, and I just think she might be hitting peak form now. And she's a lovely each-way price at around about 7-1, even if I'm slightly worried that Coolmore have supplemented a French filly for the race. I do think Clemmie's capable of running a big race.
Okay, so they supplement because they think they've got a chance of winning because you've got to pay extra to get them in.
Yeah, no, the Wild Chimes, her form is very, very strong. She's obviously trained in France, so it wouldn't have been obvious necessarily that she'd run in the race. Maybe it's just a kind of a tactical decision. But I spoke to Aidan O'Brien last week, and this has been the plan for Clemmie more or less since Leopardstown. And I think she's a very good each-way shout.
Okay, so Clemmie each-way, and if you're having two bets, Kew Gardens and Sea of Class both each-way, like because...
Yeah, I'd go for the tote bet, I'm going each-way on Kew Gardens, but if you're betting otherwise as well, I'd say win Sea of Class and win Kew Gardens, so you have two hopes of upsetting the favourite, and if she wins, she wins.
Yeah. All right, Johnny, good stuff. Thanks very much for that.
No problem.
Friday Night Racing brought to you with goracing.ie. You can plan out all your racing needs by checking out the website goracing.ie. We will see you next week, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, for more Friday Night Racing. If you're listening on the radio, then stay tuned because the crappy quiz is coming your way.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.